Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's Friday, so let's go with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho, it's Duff McKagan calling you here. You know, I'm on my whirlwind for my Tenderness album, Shameless Plug. Susan says hi, by the way. I just want to say, you know, I saw Sinead O'Connor in a birdwatching hide yesterday. And I asked her what activities she's seen. And she said, it's been 15 owls and 7 jays. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah, that one was a little bit of a stretch. But hey, anytime you get a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer giving us a joke of the week every single week for almost 2 years, you got to thank him for that. But nothing compares to you, Duff, and nothing compares to the joke of the week. Thanks to Duff for making us laugh every single Friday. And in honor of Canada Day, which is Monday, July 1st, it's Canada Day weekend. We're paying tribute to Canada's most loved band, the biggest band in Canadian history. That's right, bigger than Rush. It's true. The Tragically Hip, the most popular and famous Canadian musicians to never really make it outside of Canada. That is the strange thing. We're going to talk about why a more widespread popularity didn't happen for the Hip with Greg LaGrosse and Jamie Dew, the hosts of the Fully and Completely podcast, which is a pod dedicated completely to the Tragically Hip. Now, when I say they're huge in Canada, we're talking multiple arena shows in the same city in the same week. Just a massive, massive band with tons of hits to their credit that no one really knows outside of Canada and the northern United States, northern upstate New York and Seattle and that sort of area. But they're very, very influential in Canada. And check out Fully and Completely if you want to know more about the Tragically Hip, the podcast. It's a great place to learn more about the Hip and their music. And if you're not familiar with the Hip or Fully Completely, you can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts. Listen to it wherever you listen to fine podcasts like Talk is Jericho. So coming up with Greg and Jamie, we'll get into the Hip's music and live shows, the magnetic presence of lead singer Gord Downie, what made them so loved in Canada. And of course, we'll talk about Gord Downie's final days, the last Hip tour they did when Gord was diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, which he died of in October of 2017. It's a great story, a great ballad about one of the greatest bands, not just in Canadian history, but of all time. If you haven't heard about them, trust me, you're going to want to hear them after this. Let's get into the Tragically Hip, the biggest band that you've probably never heard of unless you're from Canada. And if you're Canadian, they are godlike. And they're here. The legacy, the conversation, the songs, the music. Let's start it now on Talk is Jericho.
All right. Burn blue on the street, loose and complete under sky, so smoky blue-green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so it danced the sidewalk clean.
Okay, so we've been, I've been going back and forth with a couple dudes that have a Tragically Hip podcast, which might seem a little strange, except for the fact that Tragically Hip is probably the biggest band, I'd say, in Canadian history, maybe.
Absolutely.
If you guys just walked in the bus for just meeting for the first time, what's your name?
Yeah, I'm Jamie Dew.
Jamie and
Greg LaGrosse.
Jamie and Greg, and your podcast is Fully Completely.
Fully that's and right. Completely.
Yeah, that's
completely.
Right. Yes.
So, but the biggest Canadian band possibly ever?
Yeah, I think Rush was that for a long time, but as far as inside of Canada, there's nothing bigger than the Hip. It's a beyond phenomenon. It's just something that's, I think, part of Canadian culture.
Like, right.
Everyday life is the Hip a little bit, you know?
And one of those things, too, like we mentioned, we're talking about in Canada proper.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
worldwide, because right. worldwide there's a lot of bands. I mean, Rush is probably the biggest worldwide Canadian band.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
But Hip not so much.
Yeah.
Mostly just in this country.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, this is a band that has done things that other bands in this country don't do. I don't know that Rush has platinum records in Canada. You know, like they've sold a million copies of a record, and in this country,
give us some stats.
Yeah, context wise, a million records in this country is a pretty big deal,
because a platinum record in Canada is 100,000.
That's right.
So to sell a million, it's called a diamond.
Diamond
is equivalent of 10 million in the States.
Yeah, which I mean, at that point, you're talking the level of gosh, I'm trying to think of bands that have done, you know, 10 million.
Well, you're looking at like Appetite for Destruction.
That's yeah. right.
Hysteria. Hysteria. The first Van Halen album.
That's right. You know, Joshua, Morissette, stuff like that.
Whitney Houston, that level of sales.
Yeah. So when we say they're big here, that's the level of big they are here.
They're right up there with all those other bands.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
And as far as, and is that just one album or is that quite a few of them?
Quite a few. The run in the 90s, when they started to blow up in the end of the 80s, the epic 1991, when all those big albums happened, you know, the Black Album and Use Your Illusions 1 and 2 and Nevermind and all that was going on, the hip blew up here there as well.
What album was that with?
Fully Complete.
Fully Complete.
Was the really big one. But Road Apples was before that, and it was a sizable hit. As in the first full length had New Orleans Is Sinking on it, which was a huge song.
Song.
Might as well be the
Blow It High Dough.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so there was a string of, you know, bigger. Fully Completely is kind of the apex moment. And then the next album, Day for Night, is a juggernaut, too.
That's right. Yeah, it was just 700,000 copies, yeah, something like that.
Is Fully Completely though? That is that their, you know, you mentioned the Black Album. Is that their Black Album? Is that
Nevermind? It's the biggest fan one. Favorite. It's the biggest one. It was, you know, there's tons and tons of hits.
What
on
hits
it.
Are on that one?
Courage, Locked in the Trunk of a Car,
100th Meridian,
yeah,
Wheat Kings,
right?
Yeah. So I mean,
and that's the thing too about the hip. And that's what they're called, is the hip. If you're in Canada, if you're
that's
from
right.
Canada,
they're, right.
No, no, it's like GNR. You don't need to say the tragically, right. But you just mentioned, okay, let's go through some of the songs and you know, like Blow It High Dough, New Orleans Is Sinking, Wheat Kings, 100th Meridian, 50s Mission Cap, Locked in the Trunk of a Car. Mm-hmm. What's those? Little Bones.
Yeah, yeah.
But all of these titles, you know, they got a little bit of a Canadian slant.
Oh, they
them.
Do. And the lyrics, they didn't start overtly Canadian. Not that the band has ever been just about Canadian content or anything like that, but they were rare in that they were not afraid to sing about Canadian topics or mention Canadian places or, you know, mythology or talk about hockey openly, you know, and make it not just like, and not a novelty. You know?
It's like, you know, you listen to Iron Maiden and you would learn about Alexander the Great and the Rime of the Ancient Mariner.
Yeah.
You listen to Tragically Hip and you learn that, you know, Bill Barilko scored the last goal he ever scored, won the Leafs the Cup, and then he got lost in a plane crash in the woods or
totally.
Something.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of Bill Barilko.
Until they found the body, and that's crazy. And that's not, and like, and the approach, the lyrics for that song too. He's reading just the back of the hockey card. That's Bill Barilko.
He even says that
card.
I got these lyrics from a hockey card.
I got this
from a hockey card.
It's no joke. It's word for word.
And it's word for it's exactly the card.
He
yeah.
Somehow makes that
Do
work.
Do you know the story behind that? Did he just couldn't think of a lyric and picked up the hockey card or what?
Yeah, I don't know.
He saw the hockey card, and there was recently a book that came out by Michael Barkley, mm-hmm. and he talks about it a lot in this book. And Gord basically went to the Toronto Reference Library, because this is like 1993 or 1992, and you know, there wasn't the internet, so he couldn't do research, and he wanted to find out more about this Bill Barilko guy. And so he went to the Reference Library, and he had to go into the basement of the Toronto Reference Library, and they're talking about him going through all this like microfiche and stuff like that, you know, to find out about a character in a song that he hasn't even written yet. You know, this is the kind of tactic that he would use to write a song. And he talks about being alarmed, you know, like he was so into what he was doing that when somebody came downstairs, you know, and sort of tapped him on the shoulder, that he was actually alarmed.
Startled because he was so into
what he was reading. But yeah. I mean, it's eerie. Basically, this kid shouldn't have been on this plane. He went on this plane against his mother's best wishes, and you know, he's never seen again, right? And
and he scored a goal in overtime or something that won the Leafs the Cup.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
And even just that line, the Leafs, we're talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. We're so Canadian here. Yeah. And this is what we're going to delve into throughout the course of this podcast, because what I want to really talk about is, why did the hip never really make it outside of Canada? Mm-hmm. And that's not just like the States. We're talking England, Australia. Yeah. Like most bands, you know, I remember even like the Watchmen mm-hmm. were big in Canada and had a big following in Australia.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
You know, the hip never had that.
No.
Now, and I remember I was working at Red River Community College in Winnipeg. I used to do as a part-time gig as a security at the functions that they would have at the college. And I remember the booker, she was a really cool chick, and she was super excited, and she was always really involved in booking whoever it was. I remember one of them that she booked is what's the guy? Is a magician? Is it Jonathan the Magician or some guy like that? That's a magician. He's actually performing in Vegas now. And the other one that she talked about was, I got this band. They're going to be the Rolling Stones of Canada. They're called the Tragically Hip.
Oh wow!
So I was actually, it was Red River College, and I went 88 to 90. So I'm going to say it was probably 89, because that was right before.
Yeah, that jives before they really broke.
And they played the college, and it was, you know, it was a pretty rocking gig. And I my job was to, you know, make sure the band was good backstage, make sure no one gets, like, I don't know who the hell they were, but, you know, stand here,
right?
And, you know, if anything happens or whatever, stand there. But the and I was pretty, you know, it was rock and roll band. What's up, guys? And, you know, you get everything cool. And then I remember they had beer, and they're like, "You want a beer?" And I had a beer with Gord and with the guitar player, Rob Baker, the long black hair. And no big story, but just, "You want a beer? Sure, click it. Cheers, have a good show."
Yeah.
But that was my one brush with greatness with Gord Downie drinking a beer. When, I mean, I was 18 at the time. Gord probably was 23, 24. I mean, how
old? Not much older than that, older, right?
I mean, how old was he when he died?
He was 53.
So I'm 40, so 5 years older. So he was probably 23 years old. Yeah. But she was saying how this band is going to be the next big thing. And for whatever reason, she called it, and she was right. And basically, out of the gates, what was their first record?
They had an EP, but their first one is called Up to Here, and it came out in 89.
Early Eames and Blow It High Dough. And off the bat, I remember Blow It High Dough, hearing that in the radio, and it was a big hit basically right off the bat. Did they make it that quickly all across Canada?
I think so. I mean, New Orleans Is Sinking was the huge single from that album. And Blow It High Dough was big, too. And so was 38 Years Old. But
38 Years, right. 38 Years Old, Never Kissed a Girl.
Oh, yeah. Great track. Yeah. But New Orleans Is Sinking was just everywhere and stayed everywhere for a long, long time. That riff is just...
Yes, great riff.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. And it, you know...
Possibly, maybe. I mean, well, is it their signature song, do you think?
Kind of, yeah. I mean...
For better or for worse, I think it is. Like, I think at near the end, they were probably like... I mean, I don't know. It, like, when you play and you play the same song night after night after night, it sort of becomes an albatross, I'm guessing, to a certain degree, right?
Like, it does, except for when you play it live. If it's a song, like you said, like the signature song, the big hit, the energy of the crowd that night makes it brand new every night.
Yeah.
And that's the difference, you know?
But it is a special tune. I think it might be their moment song that really, I mean, they can build a career on it. They have tons of hits that come after it, you know, Ahead by a Century and everything off of Fully Completely, but there's something about that song that's just this, like, bonding. I went to a bachelor party out in the boonies in the middle of nowhere, and I got crazy seasick, and I barfed all over the place. And I had to leave early because I was like, I'm green, I gotta get out of here. And one buddy's younger brother drove me back to the train station, and I was like 30, I don't know, 6 or 7 at the time. And this kid was like 18, 19, and he drove me to the train station. We have zero in common as people, just nothing at all. But then we were just listening to the radio, and New Orleans Is Sinking came on. We sang the whole thing, just, you know, windows down, just cruising out. We know every single word. And it was like, and I think that's kind of what it is. There's something about the hip that's just bonding to whatever, you know, your background is in Canada.
Right. And if you guys are listening and haven't heard any hip songs, stop right now and go listen to New Orleans Is Sinking. It's a rock. Great rocking tune.
Oh, yeah.
3.5 minutes long. It'll give you a little sense of what the hip is all about. So go listen to that and then come back.
Yeah.
What did you think? Did you like it?
Yeah.
I hope you did. but I think what you just mentioned is the hip really bonded Canadians.
Yeah.
Because it was almost like our own little world in Canada, where nobody knew of this massive band. And when you're talking massive, they would play, where are we? So where they play? They play the ACC, Air Canada Centre.
For a few nights in a row.
Same thing in Calgary at the Saddle Dome, or Winnipeg in the MTS Centre. They would do, you know, 3 nights in a row all across the country. Mm-hmm. Problem is, there's only, you know, 20 places you can play in Canada. Yeah. And so they couldn't really hit it every year. But that was basically their world.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was that's also one of the strange like dichotomies, I guess, of this band too. Is, you know, they're doing arenas back and forth across this country, and if there were more stadiums, I'm sure they could have, you know, played the Sky Dome or whatever as well. And then they cross the border, and, you know, they can play small clubs just on the other side of the border. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the further you get out from the Canadian border, the more distant they become. I have a friend that went to see them in Orlando. He went to film school in Orlando, and when Day for Night came out, I mailed him the record because it came out different release dates. It came out here in October and it came out there in like February of the next year. So I mailed it to him, and then he played it for all his buddies down there and got all his buddies together to go to this, you know, place and this gig in Orlando. And I was thinking, this is going to be so great. They're all going to have such a great time. And then I get the photos from this thing. He has to mail me the photos, of course, because again, it's, and he's like right on the stage. Like he's right. He's basically on the stage. It looks like a high school gym, you know, in Orlando. So there's just zero penetration down there.
Just to put some perspective on things, when they went to Minneapolis, they played First Avenue. That's where we played this tour. Mm-hmm. So they're playing the same venues that Fozzy's playing, and we're doing good, but we're not selling out arenas in another country.
Right.
You know, so that's the type of places. And I also had heard over the years, for example, they played in San Francisco, I believe at the Warfield or something like that. And they were saying because they couldn't play bigger places because they weren't drawing that the majority of people who were going were Canadians that were living in Minneapolis or would fly down to see the rare United States appearance from the Hip. So most of the crowd is still Canadians.
Yeah.
So even if you were a Hip fan from the States, you couldn't get in because it was sold out with most of the other Canadians.
Totally.
So, you know, that's kind of, I guess, why do you think they never transcended to any other country?
That is the eternal Canadian question.
Right.
You know, and every album, you're like, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one. There's a lot of things that it could be. You know, there's maybe some poor marketing and, you know, not enough push. I read something somewhere. I don't know how accurate it is, but it sounds about right. When they Pull It Completely was the one that was supposed to be pushed hard in the States, and here we go. Apparently, BMG pulled all their U.S. marketing after like 2 or 3 weeks or something like that because it didn't catch fire right away. And there's just a million things happening. It was a huge album year and people were buying everything. And so if it wasn't catching fire right away, you'd get out of the way. You know, because the next thing's coming, I guess. I don't know. But we, you know, every album, we were like, well, this is going to be the one. Well, this will be the one. Because they were kind of a, you know, there are REM, there are Stones, there are Springsteen, all kind of rolled into one. But they're a hard band to pin down because each album changed a little bit and there's a lot of
that's a great point.
You know, they were constantly evolving, not interested in doing maybe what was current. I don't know,
but mostly just a fucking rock and roll band.
Well, absolutely.
You know, there's
wanted to push.
There's
know?
No like, grunge element or heavy metal. It's just rock and roll. It's a hard driving to me. I mean, you mentioned the REM comparison, the Springsteen,
which are accurate, but also not
accurate. what was the third one that you said?
The Stones.
The Stones.
Yeah.
To me, the closest that I can find is Pearl Jam.
Absolutely.
They're Canada's Pearl Jam.
100%.
That is a really good comparison. I just went and saw them at Wrigley this past summer, and I didn't realize that Pearl Jam had this. You know, I was like, it was my third show, and I was at a pub just outside of Wrigley Field, and somebody was there, and I'm like, this is my third show. And I was with a buddy who's seen them 18 times. And I thought, well, this is my pal. He's seen them 18 times. And this guy's like, yeah, I saw them like 18 times on the last tour. I did not realize that Pearl Jam had that sort of following either. So that's a really apt.
They do have that with a charismatic, kind of weird, reclusive, to a degree, front man.
Yep.
That changes their style, but it's always just rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like they were never grunge. They were just lumped in with that because that's what was happening at the time.
Sure.
And that makes me wonder, like, I think Eddie Vedder was a fan or is a fan of the Hip. I've heard that.
Yeah, when the news came out about Gord's health, Eddie Vedder mentioned it at a show. He, you know, sent best wishes to Gord.
So that would, like, why didn't someone, like, surely you have to see it with I mean, if you look through but there's a long list of Canadian bands that didn't make it outside, and there's a you know, Loverboy made it, Streetheart did not.
To me,
Streetheart is just as good, if not better, than Loverboy,
for sure.
You know, I mean, Rush made it, Triumph made it, but you know, Prism and Harlequin and Trooper really didn't. So
that's awesome.
I'm thinking about the Hip and thinking about surely somebody would go, listen, I saw this band. They sold out, you know, the Winnipeg Arena, and the crowd was going nuts. Mm-hmm. They're very Canadian, but we can do something with them. But they never got that extra.
Yeah, and you know, they got the Saturday Night Live appearance when
Dan Aykroyd
strong-armed them on there, and that's great. And there's a great performance, but that didn't do it either. I don't know.
But then again, what do they do when they do the Saturday Night Live?
They didn't do New Orleans is Sinking, right?
No, no,
they did Grace 2 and Nautical Disaster.
Well, okay, Nautical Disaster is, to me, not even one of the top 25 best songs. And Grace 2 is a great song, but it's a grower, not a shower.
Sure, absolutely.
Like, you gotta hear that song 4 or 5 times to really catch the groove of it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, Dan Aykroyd's like, this is the one of my favorite bands, the Tragically Hip. And it starts with that, it's kind of boring if you didn't know who they were. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a channel switcher.
Yeah.
Instead of going like, here's a Tragically Hip, bow, dun, 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 bow, bow, doing 50s Mission Cap, or like you said, the New Orleans, or Little Bones, or something that had some fire to it, which they were great at.
Yeah.
But they didn't, you know, and I'm wondering what was the decision and mindset behind those two songs.
Well, it's the, you know, Day for Night had just come out, and I think they were just like, this is who we are. We're not going to, you know, this is we're going forward. We're not going to, you know, if this works or it doesn't. You know?
The true artist category that we understand. But like I said, for the United States, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You almost wish that Aykroyd would have said, listen, guys, I got you the gig, but
you have to play.
You know, you can play Grace 2.
Little Bones.
Play it second.
Yeah.
Open up with a rocker and then do this more introspective. Yeah, yeah. I think Grace 2 might be my favorite all-time hip song, but it wasn't always.
Sure.
Until I went back and watched the Saturday Night Live after Gord was diagnosed and really got that tune. But when I was, you know, growing up around that time frame, I never really liked that tune, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think I always wondered too, like, why didn't a Pearl Jam or any of those other bands that we mentioned give them a tour?
Yeah.
Because if they would have caught on with one
of bring them
bands
on board, and
I think they really could have cracked.
For sure.
Interesting. I mean, they opened for the Stones. They did a few sets opening for the Stones, believe it or not.
In Canada?
In Europe.
Really?
So they were sort of just one-offs, though, I think. Like, I don't think they went whole leg with them.
Do it. They pick a band to do one or two shows and move to the next.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they did in that case. I mean, that really had no, you know, little to no impact. I want to go back to something you said, though. You said a minute ago, you know, you were talking about them playing in, you know, Winnipeg Arena or wherever they're playing, and there's people there watching and, you know, telling their friends they're kind of Canadian, but... Like, what does that mean? That's the question, ultimately, right?
So
like,
what does Canadian
what
mean?
Does that mean? Like, is it?
Well, it's all very mysterious, the
it
Canadian
is.
Way.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's very mysterious to have to explain it, but to us, we know what it means. Like, when I think of, okay, what is Canadian rock and roll, I think of, like, I'm from the prairies, so to me, Canada, the majority of Canada is prairies. It's flat, it's cold.
Yeah.
A big sense of history with a lot of native... you know, First Nation element to it, and hockey, and you know, like Wheat Kings. To me, that's the Brandon Wheat Kings, which is just down the road from Winnipeg, the hockey team. But all of those things that Gord was talking about would interest him, and especially as he gets further in his career, were very much First Nation influence.
Absolutely.
You know, and I don't think that translates to, you know, New York and LA and that sort of place.
No, tough to plug in that way, right?
You know what I mean? But Neil Young is also very Canadian, and he's one of the biggest legends in rock history all over the world.
Yeah,
his sound is also very Canadian to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a song like "Rockin' in the Free World" could be a hip song.
Totally.
You know, and
when you say that, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean,
but there's this unique thing that. Like, you, as you said, trying to explain what Canadian is to other people when we just sort of know. Like, I was born in the States. I moved to Toronto when I was 10. And I always felt a little out of step. Like, I didn't grow up with hockey. I did, you know, there was a lot of growing pains or adjustment.
Right.
You know, I wasn't unhappy to be here by any means, but I always felt a little outside of the box. Like, just not, I didn't quite get it. And then over time, like, the hips music was sort of the lens through which I saw Canada. And I started to understand
that's interesting
my place in it, you know, and like how to you know, how to appreciate these things that were foreign to me initially and now are, you know, part of my existence.
part of because, like you said, it does. I'm actually, there's a song in my head and I'm trying to find it. It goes down and down and down and down. Is it
all right?
Yeah.
Which one is it?
Tom Thompson came paddling past.
Why can't I think of the name?
Yeah, I know.
Three Pistols.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah. All right.
Like, this song could be a Neil Young song.
Oh, yeah.
Going back to what we were saying before.
Yeah.
So there's this sound here is just a Canadian sound, you know?
Yeah.
And then also when you talk about Gord, and this is also another reason to me. Like, at first, I had an argument with my best friend who was a huge hip fan when Gord was diagnosed, and we'll get into all that too. Just that whole last 3 years of Gord's life is something that hopefully all of us can go out that way.
Yeah.
But I was always saying that one of the reasons to me is that Gord wasn't a great looking front man.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, you kind of needed that. Like,
sure.
You had your Michael Hutchins, and you had, you know, the cat from REM, who when he had hair was pretty cool looking guy.
Yeah.
Gord never really had that. And like, even on the Saturday Night Live, he's wearing, you know, green shirt and
totally
shitty pants. You know, and like, even like Kurt Cobain was a good looking guy. He could wear that stuff and he would look like a male model.
Easy on the eyes.
Down.
Absolutely.
Right. And Speedy was like, that's not true. My friend Speedy, that's not the case. To me, trying to make it into the States, maybe that has something to do with it.
Absolutely.
I think you have to have that marketability or whatever
that they
just seem to lack. I mean, none of the band is particularly
good,
handsome,
great
you
call.
Know, as far as that goes.
That's a great call.
They all sort of, you know, at one point they, you know, they had short longs and, you know,
there were some mullets.
Short longs, you know, like
too short to be long, too long to be short. Such a Donald that they hear.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know, they looked like they didn't care, and I think ultimately they probably didn't,
which,
you know,
is cool though. But like I said, if you look at through all the bands that quote unquote didn't care, they still had, you know, Eddie Vedder.
Yeah,
that's right.
You still had, you know, Layne Staley.
If yeah,
going through the bands that were hot then. I mean, Weiland was a rock star from the moment he walked on stage. So
100%.
It's Chris Cornell. I mean, these guys. Mm-hmm. Chris Cornell looks like a freaking Greek god. And Gord did not, and because there was nobody in that band that really stood out. Maybe.
Yeah, the image thing could have been something.
Image thing.
But and part of, I mean, that's kind of what endeared them, I think, to Canadians, too, was, right. I mean, with the Stones thing, like, they don't really sound like the Stones other than being like a Blood, Sweat, and Tears sort of, you know, rock band.
Oh, yes,
but
yeah.
There was this thing I always thought was interesting when I was, you know, fostering my music obsession when I was young. I read a bunch of Lester Bang stuff, all of his old reviews, and he was a big Stones guy until he wasn't. But his thing with the Stones was, like, the Beatles are perfect. They sound like they're from another world. They're so perfect. But the Stones, you listen to the Stones, and people were like, I could do that.
Yeah, floppy, you know? At times.
Yeah. Like,
even to
people.
This day.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the hip was another thing. It's like, not only did it sound like something you could do too, but like, they sounded like people you knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They do. It was like, you know, the world's biggest bar band of just,
absolutely,
cats who are getting together on the weekend, you know, to do that. Because like I was saying, the fact, it's probably a cocktail of many things.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the Canadian lyrics.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the everyman image.
Yeah.
Maybe it's bad management or no, you know, push from the record company. But when you're telling me that Vedder was a fan and they played with the Stones, that somebody would go, listen, here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna start managing you. I want a piece of the band, and we're gonna make this a thing. Like Nickelback, they took Theory of a Dead Man out until Theory of a Dead Man was huge.
Yeah.
Skid Row and Bon Jovi had a piece of Skid Row and took them on tour for years until they got huge.
Yeah.
Why did that never happen with the hip?
I don't know.
Maybe
they didn't want it.
Yeah.
You know? It seemed like they're, you know, we were all gunning for them to break somewhere else. So we could,
maybe,
like,
they didn't want it, yeah.
You know, but I think having the ability to play stadiums in Canada and, you know, be this enormous rock star, but then be able to still go play clubs, you know,
maybe they like that.
I what a neat experience that could be to have both worlds happening at once. And for Canadians, like, to imagine seeing, like, your favorite, like, gigantic something huge, like Metallica or whatever, and, like, when you're in the States, you see them in stadiums, but as soon as they cross the pond, you can go watch them in a 200-person venue, you know, and be,
that's
like, right up close. Like, what a crazy experience to have, you know?
And if you're thinking, like, from a financial standpoint, I mean, let's be honest, every freaking 10th song on the radio and every rock station across the country is a hip song. Yeah. So you know that.
I hopped in the car to come pick him up to come here and Poets started playing.
There you go.
Right on the radio. Just there.
So I'm sure that they're publishing their royalties, you know, the gigs, the merch. Yeah. They probably were multimillionaires just from Canada alone, which is so rare.
Yeah.
But once again, this is the biggest band in Canadian history.
Yeah.
Bigger than Rush in Canada, I'd say. Sure. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, Rush, maybe the album sales are comparable, but it isn't. They aren't embraced like this. It isn't...
Rush is still more of like a musician's band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A bit of a dude's band, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot of ladies who are down with Rush.
Well, the hip is everybody's band. You know, yeah, guys.
Absolutely.
Teenagers,
yep.
Old guys, whatever, yep. In between. Like, everybody knows the Tragically Hip.
Yeah, pukey me in the car with the young fella driving me. We were bonded.
It was all
there.
An interesting comparison. It's just dawning on me right now. Years ago, I heard Tony Kornheiser talking, and he was talking about, with Michael Wilbon, he was talking about going to see a hockey game. And he said, you know what? I'd never been to a hockey game before. But he's like, I will now say that is the best in-arena sport that there is. Like, there's just something about it when you're in the arena and you're there live watching it. But he had to go there to get that. It didn't translate on the television. Mm-hmm. Sure, it didn't translate in the newspaper. It didn't whatever. You know, the band might be the same. they came to the States to play, and they, you know, I'm not going to say all the tickets were bought up by Canadians, but, you know, maybe just enough people didn't get out to see them, and they weren't played on the radio because they're not mandated to be played on the radio in the States like they are here.
Right. There's a thing Canadian here content. Called CanCon, which is a government law that you have to play a certain percentage of Canadian music on Canadian radio.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, they definitely got a break there that they're not going to get down south, no matter who's marketing for them or managing them.
Yeah.
So it makes you wonder. They're similar to hockey in that way. I think there's a lot of Canadians that are like, I don't understand why hockey isn't the number one game in the world. How is soccer the most, you know, beautiful game? Hockey is great, but enough people don't, you know, they don't see it, whether there's not arenas in their cities or whatever. You know,
that's a good point, too. It brings something else to mind, too. That there might have been a little bit of a prejudice against them because they're so big in Canada.
Sure.
Like, oh, here's the Canadian thing.
This is your
it's
best?
Just, it's just a Canadian thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think that could be people might talk themselves out of it because, well, they're playing arenas in Canada, but they can't play anything but clubs here, so it must just be a Canadian thing. Let's not even bother.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think so.
Because there is a huge Canadian thing attached to it. Like, Neil Young doesn't carry, like, the Canadian stigma.
Once again,
around
that's
him, right?
No, he doesn't.
Because he's just Neil Young.
And neither does Rush.
And same thing, Rush doesn't either, you know, but it's really branded on them, you know. And all these bands around them that were blowing up, like Our Lady Peace and Bare Naked Ladies, made it in the States.
That's true.
You know, which
I
thought was crazy over the hip. Nothing against them. They seem like fine people.
Well, it's just like Crash Test Dummies.
Sure.
That huge.
Yeah, the Superman song.
Mum song.
Yeah, come on.
It was so big that Weird Al Yankovic did a parody of it.
That's right.
Yeah. Like, you know, how does. And that's, you know, that's one of the weirdest bands that you never expect to make it. But for
none
some
of them
reason,
have that label, though. They didn't roll into the States with that label.
Alanis Morissette, huge in the States.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, not rolling in with the Canadian thing. So, I mean, you know, it's one of those questions where I don't think you can give a specific ABC answer.
No.
I think, like I said, it's a cocktail of all these things.
Yeah.
How many times, I'm not going to say even if you have, how many times did you see the Hip live?
I saw them 19 times.
How many?
19.
19 times.
Yeah.
Wow.
From
what years?
From 19, I saw them on my 19th birthday. So in this province, that's when you're legally able to drink. So that was my first time seeing them on my 19th birthday.
Nice.
All the way until the last tour. Like,
so, years
so 2016.
Wise,
so 94 to 2016.
That's a hell of a range.
Yeah. Yeah. But I took a few years off there. It was near the end that I saw them a couple more times. I don't know whether I got nostalgic or whatever, and then certainly with the last tour,
now,
I got
very nostalgic.
Now,
why did you take a couple years off?
You know, the records changed for me. I was living a different life. I got into different music, and I just sort of, they sort of became a bit more peripheral, you know.
And they didn't play
at one
a lot
point.
Of hip, new hip. Like, well, I moved to the States in 96. But when I saw, you know, kind of delving in as when Gord announced his last tour, when he passed, of course, you go through the big phase and looking at all these albums that I didn't even really know existed, and then reading the singles and going, I haven't heard any of these songs.
Yeah.
So it's like they had all of these hits kind of in the early part of their career, and then in the middle part. But I guess you could probably say the same about Pearl Jam or, sure. or the Stones or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the really, diehards will stay with a band, but you know the push that's going to be on radio and you know videos
the
and
peak
stuff
is over.
It goes away. Yeah. And but I got because I kind of drifted away for a little bit, but because I was much more into punk and metal stuff, and then I swung back in really hard at for the late period stuff. Because they were just doing a different thing that really worked for me. Where they got, I don't know if they got weirder, but they were experimenting, and each album had even more drastic changes. I felt like, and
that's what it felt like to me.
Something going on. I was like, they're really trying. Like, you know, they could have just laid back and just wrote the same song over and over, and people loved him so much it would have been fine. You know, they're just going tour every year and who cares, but they were still trying so hard to construct a great album year after year after year, like right up to the end. Like there was a lot of work into it, a lot of creativity that there was no repetition.
But I like that about them. It's the same
greatest
reason why
thing.
They, same reason why they played Grace 2 on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're not going to play by the rules.
No, we're done with
that. And maybe it wasn't even an act of defiance. Maybe it's just how they thought.
Yeah.
You know, how many times did you see them?
I only saw them once.
Once?
Yeah, yeah.
That's you and me are tied.
Yeah. I was a bartender for most of my life, so I worked on the weekends and nights, always nights, right?
When did you see them?
I saw them in 2003.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I saw them in 95 at another roadside attraction.
Oh, nice.
Oh, right.
In Calgary.
Yeah.
I don't remember who else played. I just remember we were going to see the Hip. And I remember we got right to the front and people were, it wasn't a mosh, but it was a very slam dancey, jumping up and down.
Yeah.
People were
pretty aggressive. Yeah,
pretty aggressive. People were into it.
Yeah,
it was very, very exciting. And I remember, you know, we talk about Gord kind of being a little awkward or in press and interviews, and not, you know, a 10 out of 10 looks wise. But that guy was a great front man.
It was so unique. So
explain.
Okay, going back to New Orleans is Sinking. When we talk about that song, there's a break in that song right after the second chorus, where he would begin to chant or rant or rave, and oftentimes they would jam out new songs. Like new songs would come
during
from
that
material. Yeah, it was just sort of
that's
riffing,
where,
and
you get
nautical
disaster
comes from that. Poets comes from that.
Mm-hmm.
Head by a Century.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not sure whether they'd be doing them in sound check as well, and then, you know, road testing them in the middle, but oftentimes that's how they would manifest themselves.
Yeah. And there's people that do a full song in the middle of New Orleans is Sinking, and then boom, back in and crush the end of it.
That's right.
So you mentioned the uniqueness of Gord. His movements.
Yeah.
He would talk to the microphone stand. I've seen him do that before.
Where he's getting fights with the microphone stand.
A lot of the lyrics in this weird. It was like it was sort of theater. It was sort of
a little bit
just
spastic, like a little kind of Joe Cocker type vibe, where it looks you think that he's got maybe some kind of a nervous tic. Or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, or even that weird dancing that Weiland got into eventually.
Yes,
you know, right. There was a lot of it was like just. He was always captivating, like the entire time he was on stage.
And that's another reason why it didn't matter that he wasn't a pinup idol. As a frontman, he was mesmerizing.
Yeah.
You know, even, and we talked about what he was wearing on the Saturday Night Live, but his last tour, he came up with something that I would wear on stage. You know, the head-to-toe sequin suit with the hat and the feather in it. It's like he suddenly decided he was going to be like, you know, 75 David Bowie on stage just out of nowhere. He never wore that stuff before.
Never. No.
Like a silver sequin jacket with matching silver sequined pants, and then like a Jaws t-shirt.
Yeah.
For no apparent reason.
Yeah.
Like, what was the deal with that Jaws t-shirt?
I don't know,
but they've sold a lot of Jaws t-shirts in the interim.
And everywhere now.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Gordon and kind of what happened in the last few years of his life. And obviously, all of us are Hip fans. It seems you've seen them 19 times. How did that hit you when you heard the news? And just explain to people that don't know basically what happened.
Okay, so during the May long weekend in Canada, a doctor
2014
2016 gotcha. Yeah, 2016, we were getting ready to hear a new Hip record. It was coming out, but it had been pushed back a little
bit.
Man Machine Poem.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Man Machine Poem.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and essentially they had a press conference at Sunnybrook Hospital here in Toronto, which is a big cancer hospital, and the doctor came out. Tragic Hit Management was there. I think Gord was there. He may not have been, but the doctor came out and basically made the announcement that he had been diagnosed with, oh my gosh, I forget what the actual, it's brain cancer, but it's a very strange sounding one. It's a very fast acting one.
Incurable.
And it's incurable. They let us know that they had already performed surgery at this point and that he had lost some of his memory. And it was, you know, shocking. It was jaw-dropping.
Now, let me just, the reaction of this would be the equivalent of Mick Jagger or Springsteen saying they have inoperable brain cancer. The reaction you would get from the world is the reaction that Canada gave when Gord announced that. And if Mick announced it and Gord announced it, Canadians would be much more upset about Gord probably than Mick or Springsteen.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
Yeah.
Because glioblastoma was the brain cancer that he had, but he was a Canadian icon.
Yeah,
that's right.
Bigger than most.
Yeah,
yeah, I would say.
Well, it was how connected people felt, and I mean, and it is, you know, a lot of we lose, you know, musicians that we cherish all the time, but when the announcement came that he was sick, and then with his passing, I mean, you know, they hung the flags at half mast. Like, that doesn't happen.
That's something like, you know, like presidents and prime ministers and war heroes.
Yeah.
Like, this is a rock and roll musician.
Yeah.
Think about it in that respect.
Yeah. But he's essential to the culture of the fabric of culture in this country.
That's
so
a great
point. You know, I was like, yeah, you do that.
You do that
for Gord.
So when he announced that he had brain cancer, then the Hip announces that they're going to do a farewell tour.
Yeah.
They don't even really call it a farewell tour. They say they're going to go out and tour for this record.
Summer tour.
And it's going to be a summer tour. Yeah. And it's not.
And it's only in Canada.
And they won't say it's the last tour.
Yeah.
Or they don't say it's the last tour.
Really?
But everybody sort of knows. It's hushed, right?
I always thought that it was kind of announced as the, but that makes sense. Why would they put such a negative slant on something, right?
That's right. There's a documentary that they released shortly after the tour. And they talk about the incredible pressure the band was under because they didn't know.
I watched that. What's it called? Do you recall?
Long time running.
Long time running.
Yeah. That's right. And they basically had rehearsals every night. They went from having one or two teleprompters on the stage with lyrics, you know, and a set list to eight or something like that. There were moments in the
Gord didn't have his memory.
He didn't have his memory. He was learning. They show their first jam session back and basically they tell him the song and then they put a screen in front of him with the lyrics and it's almost like he's relearning. It's almost like they're a cover band at this point and he's coming in as a new singer relearning.
A shell of himself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's the same.
But only they know that. Anyone watching the show is still getting.
That's right. The documentary comes out after the tour. When we're watching the show, we don't know this.
Top shelf. He's wearing that crazy outfit. Everyone's losing their minds. The energy was huge. There's so many emotions happening.
And then people know that this is probably going to be the last time.
Well,
we know that
it's incurable. Like it's coming.
He's going to die. Right.
Yeah.
It reminds me of. Did you guys ever see that the Glenn Campbell documentary called I'll Be Me?
I've not seen it. No.
You guys should watch it. Glenn Campbell, obviously famous singer, had Alzheimer's. And when he was diagnosed, same thing. I'm going to go do a tour. And here's the deal. I don't know if they had notes posted or whatever, but the idea was, listen, he doesn't remember shit. If he forgets, you just expect it. And people, of course, his fans are like, thank you, Glenn. Do what you can. All the teleprompters, he's literally on stage with his daughter and his daughter's banjo player, son's on drums or whatever. He's like, he goes up, he plays. He's like, I have no idea who any of these people are. Sorry, guys. But when he got into the groove, he was perfect. That guitar playing, that muscle memory got him through it. I'm assuming Gord probably was the same.
Yeah.
It felt that way. I saw them on the second to last show in Toronto, which was like, I think they played three shows after that.
Yeah.
And the way they started each of the shows was they started in a tight circle in the center of the stage, all standing very close to one another, and they played four or five songs. They played a full, you know, like a set. And then they went into their respective sort of places that we know them on the stage and played another set. They had a little bit of a break in between, and they let him sort of go back, change outfits.
Yeah.
Why do you think they did that?
I think maybe to get him warmed up, to help the music cue in, to get him
make him
rolling.
Feel comfortable that he's with his friends, sort of thing, his brothers.
Could be.
Yeah, I think so. That's what it felt like, and it felt for us as well. There's a lyric in one of the songs Greg and I talked about on the podcast earlier this year. The song is "It's a Good Life If You Don't Weaken," and it's a fantastic song. It's one of the later records, and this has been a real cool journey for me, experiencing them with Greg, getting to know this later content.
Do like album.
That's right.
We're going in chronological order. We do all the tracks.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So now we're into the later records that I didn't listen to as much, and Greg is sort of sherping me through them, right? And there's this lyric, and it's a forest of whispering speakers, and you know, it's just this group of people in a forest, all in hushed tones, talking potentially about somebody that is ill, you know, and that's really what it felt like. It felt like we were nobody wanted to say it out loud, but we were all watching it and we were all enjoying it, but we all knew it was the end. I mean, the CBC, which is the national network here, which is there's nothing equivalent in America really, but the BBC would be in UK,
exactly.
it's a public radio. They broadcast the last concert on air from Kingston
and tell them how many people watched it.
One third of this country watched that.
One third of the entire country watched the Tragic Hip's final concert.
Yeah,
that can you imagine anything? You know, one third. So I mean, I don't know how many people are in Canada, but
like 36 million.
So you've got
million?
You know, 12 million people watching.
That's right.
Be the equivalent of in the States, which is what 250 million people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somewhere around there.
So you know, you're talking 80 million people watching a show. I don't think 80 million
all
people
at the same time
have ever watched a show. That's like triple the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
just to put perspective on it.
And they ran the entire thing uninterrupted, commercial-free, the 3-hour concert.
Which is a huge thing as well for that type of real estate
100%,
on CBC. 100%, yeah. You know? It's interesting to me because when Gord started to forget, he was doing a lot of interviews with Peter Mansbridge.
Oh, man, yeah, I saw that. That
like
was Pete, hard.
It was a couple of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he even says, "I have your name written on my hand. Because I know who you are. I've known you for years, but I have no idea what your name is."
Yeah.
And just to see him, but he's still out there and not crusading against brain cancer or, you know, not a dollar from every ticket goes to cancer research, whatever. He was just doing what he does and knowing, like, I can't remember shit, so please help me with this.
Yeah.
It was real interesting to watch that aspect of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that interview in particular, the one where, because Peter brings it up and he's like, "Now you know, I've known you for decades and but you know, my name's written on your hand there, you know."
Yes.
It's heartbreaking. It's just, you know, brutal to watch, but it's important to see too. And it was great like Gord to get out there, and he was still creating art, but also really realized that I've got a very little bit of time here left, and you know, so whatever I say, people are really listening right now,
right?
You know, and so he really put so much focus on First Nations.
He really did, it was
great. Like, if you, and what a wonderful selfless thing to do, like to realize that you really have people's attention more than you ever have, and choosing something to talk about to really mean something before you're gone, you know, which is great. And I'm glad he chose to do that. It was pretty inspiring. Yeah, it was a hell of a year.
It's we were talking about the Peter Mansbridge thing, and I was going to say that, you know, when you watch this, and like I said, you can see the deterioration, but still people now more than ever becoming hip fans and rallying behind Gord.
Oh, yeah.
But the last concert, you can't watch it online. They took it down. I tried to watch it. I think they took it down.
Oh, wow.
Really? CBC did, yeah. Watch, I think they closed with Grace 2. Is that the last song that they did, or one of the last
Grace
songs?
Grace 2 is the end of the set proper, and then the encore. There's a few encores. It's in one of the encores. And the
I think
final
it's a Head by a Century.
Head by a Century.
Yeah.
A Head by a Century.
Yeah. That's right.
But, dude, he...
Oh, the Grace 2, though, is...
Primal Scream.
Yes.
Where... all of this pageantry and, like, you know, Gord, you can do it. He knows he's going to die.
Yeah.
And he's mad at God for putting him into this position. And he's screaming.
Yeah.
It's one of the
intense.
Most. It reminds me, if you guys are Nirvana fans, when you hear that Nirvana Unplugged album.
Yeah.
Where did you sleep last night?
Oh,
Cobain's
Jesus.
Vocal on that is insane.
Yeah, man.
It's so heart wrenching. Yeah.
I've got goosebumps just thinking about it.
Just thinking about it. Yeah, it's ahead by a century. So yeah, Grace 2 is the end of the second encore. Century is the end of the third. I think it was Grace 2, though. He's just
Him here now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
Tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming down his face. It's one of the most riveting, heart-wrenching, powerful moments in rock and roll history.
100%.
That I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and just thinking about this. As a matter of fact, the head of rock programming at Spotify, her name is Allison Hagendorf. She's a big Hip fan.
Huh.
And, you know, wish she was around 15 years ago, she could have probably helped them more.
Yeah, yeah.
But I sent her that clip, just like, check this out, dude. Like, this is the most emotional thing.
I've got to find a way to rewatch that now.
And don't quote me on that, but the last time I tried to find it, I couldn't. But you can find it. Somebody's filming the big screen.
There's those. Yeah.
So you could just watch Gord on the big screen.
And it's still effective. Like, you can really still feel it.
Yeah,
so
it may be even
intensely.
More effective because it's raw, because it's coming from somebody's camera, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing that he was doing, which was very interesting, was before the guys went on stage, he would kiss them all on the lips.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He kissed Peter Mansbridge on the lips as well.
Yeah.
Do you know the reason for that, or what was he doing there?
I don't know, but I think it was just, I think when you know that your time's up and you have a gift of a little moment left, you know, I think you just express yourself however you want to. And if you want to, you're running out of time seeing these people. Like, I think you're getting as close to them. I don't mean physically, like, necessarily,
no, but it is close.
A connection with them that's, you know,
like, we're not friends for 25 years and made a career together. But if I came to kiss you on the lips as a greeting, it's very strange.
It's right,
you know,
there. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I've known Rich Ward, my partner in Fozzy, for 20 years, and we've built this. But if he kissed me on the lips, I'd be like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but
we're trying to play a show here, guy.
Every night, yeah, he would do that. And I think he even did it to Peter. I think he said to Peter Mansbridge, listen, I kiss people on the lips. Can I kiss you on the lips?
Yeah.
And he does.
Yeah. I really experience you for a second, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
interesting.
That was another interesting thing that I found.
And I thought it was kind of cool because a lot of people saw that and were talking about it. And Gord's really outlandish outfit. And there was a lot of, you know, guys I was around at work and other places who were just, you know, like, good old-fashioned Canadian boys who, you know, might find the shiny stuff a little bizarre, but it was Gord, and what was going on, they're like, I tell you, I don't know what he's wearing, but that's okay, you give him hell, Gordy. You know, and they just were like,
Gord, the suit's awesome, eh?
Totally. They're just like, all right, right on.
But I mean,
Gord do it.
And it's, like I said, just out of nowhere. Maybe there's something from his brain that he just thought, I have to wear
I
shiny
do this
suits
thing.
Now.
Yeah. I've been meaning to.
You mentioned after that tour ended, because the Kingston show was the last one, but Gord, I shouldn't say lasted. That's not, he lived another year?
He lived another year and a bit. Yeah, he died last October.
Yeah.
To where he even did some guests. He sang a song with somebody.
He sang with Blue Rodeo.
Blue Rodeo.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. He did a guest spot with Blue Rodeo.
And he released a final album.
A final album about the First Nation. It was about a kid
that
lost the snow.
One came out right amidst the news of his diagnosis. But then after he got sick, he recorded another album.
He was really prolific in that last 18 months or so.
He did an album with Kevin Drew. Kevin Drew produced, Kevin Drew's from Broken Social Scene. And he produced the album about the First Nations story called Secret Path. And then he did another one that was, and Gord wrote, it's like 18 songs. Each song is about someone specific in his life. You don't know who, but they're all, and it's, he pumped this album out really quick, but it might be his best solo album.
This is a Gord Downie solo.
It's called Introduce Yourself.
Oh.
And it is heartbreaking, fascinating. It is a, it's a remarkable album. I've not really heard anything quite like it in my life.
I want to say it came out like about 2 weeks after he died.
Yeah, it was a very, very, very emotional first listen. But kind of having that, it was almost the opposite of the end of Grace 2 at that concert, that rage there. This was the
the softer side. And it was a double album.
Yeah, it's huge. And it is, every song is worthwhile. And yeah, I don't know who the songs, sometimes you can kind of tell who he's singing about, but they're very personal and very direct, but they are not inaccessible. They're catchy as hell, which is crazy, but it's really crazy.
Another
really
Pearl Jam reference, Jeff Heyman did an article in Rolling Stone magazine last November, and it was the albums that he's listening to right now, and Introduce Yourself was one of them, and he big up to that record.
Yeah, he's just talking about how he cried through the whole thing on the first listen. Yeah,
that's, I mean, yeah, that when you can see, it reminds me a lot of, you know, Bowie when he did Black Star.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, he knew he was dying.
Yeah,
and I always love that. Something that people might not realize is Black Star opens with breathing.
Yeah.
It's Bowie just like I'm gonna record these last breaths, and got in the studio, and Gore did it. Freddie Mercury did it too. They did a Queen album when he knew he only had, they said they had to basically prop him up to sing.
Yeah,
that's a true artist.
Yeah,
you know, I have to
do the end
as much as I can out there until the end. You know.
Yeah.
When Gord passed away, you mentioned Half Mast.
Yeah.
Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister, crying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, about a rock and roll musician. Imagine, you know, Trump crying about Springsteen dying. You know what I mean? You would laugh, Trump notwithstanding, the President of the United States.
Yeah,
you would
laugh
like, what are you crying over? But here, of course, the Prime Minister is going to cry when Gord Downie dies. I think he was even at the last show wearing a Canadian tuxedo, wasn't he?
He was. Jean absolutely.
Jeans, right?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure that Pierre Trudeau is his father, by the way. I still think Jagger's his father, but that's just me. But I mean, the whole country goes in the morning. You guys were here. I wasn't. What was it like when Gord died?
Well, we knew it was coming, but I think everyone was just like, maybe he can do it.
Yeah.
He's going to do it.
Rodeo. He just did another album. Yeah.
And then it was just like, boom, and then it happened. And it was that, you know, the air came out of the room. I think everybody was just a little bit in a fog the entire day. I remember like going to work and people were just like, hey, I need some time. It was really, it was overwhelming, you know, and just a deep sadness, because it's just, when something is that intertwined in everyone's lives, even in a casual way, you know, everyone has some experience, you know, some great memories or important memories or even tragic ones that are connected to that music. It was a soundtrack for everyone's lives since, you know, 1988, 89.
That's
it was just
true story.
Always there, you know. And then for that guy, it just seemed like a pretty swell dude, you know, to get snapped away. It's all just,
you know, and it's not just like, I'm not demeaning anybody, but it's not like it's the drummer or you know, the guitar player.
No, it's the voice. It's the connection.
It's, you know, it's Gord.
Yeah.
You cannot continue because he's such an iconic player.
Yeah.
But also on the other side of the coin, these songs are so iconic and they deserve to still be heard.
Yeah.
So that's the conundrum as well. What do you do? You know what I mean? What do you do? It's like Soundgarden. What do you do?
Yeah.
Do you continue on knowing that, listen, we're doing this to keep the music going, but Gord was such an integral part.
Yeah.
Or do you do it like when Clarence Clemens died? Springsteen didn't replace him with one guy, he replaced him with three.
Mm-hmm.
So do you go out and do a tour with three or four singers?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe bring a girl and a couple, you know what I mean? Like maybe a native First Nation singer that have that vibe of Gord, the tone of his voice. Or do you just not ever do it again? I mean, what do you think?
I think that it would be pretty challenging to go and see that band play those songs without him.
Yeah.
I think that would be really difficult to see as a fan. That being said, you're so right. I mean, they released a record every 2 years.
Like, the Hip's going to play, but, you know, and Jim Cuddy's going to do some songs, and, you know, but and you Andy know, from the Skydiggers is going to do some songs, and, you know, like, if they wrapped it in with a bunch of, like,
you know,
you might, it could change, but I don't think they would do it, but
it might take a while. But look at Queen, the way they do it now. Queen plus Adam Lambert.
Right.
It's not Queen, it's Queen plus Adam Lambert. The Tragically Hip plus Jim Cuddy, this guy, or whatever. Right. You know, it's one of those things. Maybe 3 or 4 years down the line, they might want to do that. And I think fans would accept it for the right reason that they're doing it.
Yeah.
To tribute to Gord and these songs.
And they'll want
to
see the other guys too. It's not like it was.
They're not, they're part of the culture as
well. You know, everyone knows their names, you know. A lot of them are like first names, is how you describe them, you know. There's another Gord in the band.
Johnny Faye,
yeah.
Drummer.
Yeah.
Gord Lanois. is the bass player?
Paul Langlois.
Paul Langlois. Gord
Sinclair.
Gord Sinclair, yeah. Two Gords.
Yeah, that's another thing. How Canadian is that? Two Gords. And then, of course, Rob Baker, the guitar player. Yeah, two Gords.
And they're remarkable players. They're great, you know? Yeah. And they've been together since it's all, what a story, you know? And those guys, to watch them play, that's a treat in all in itself, you know?
Well, you nailed it earlier when you said, the best bar band, you know? They just got so tight and so good, and they were able to just move with his spastic rhythms. They were right there with him, you know. We might have been in the crowd going like, what is this we're seeing when we see this front man? But they knew, they didn't miss a beat. They never missed a beat. No. They could improvise with him and stick right with him.
Would you accept it if they went out again under the right circumstances?
I would have a tough time, but yeah.
Would you go?
I'm a sellout. I'd probably go, yeah. I'd have a tough time though. It would have to be the right, like you say, the right circumstances. A neat lineup, maybe sort of a one-off type thing. Or
celebration of Gord Downie with the tragic hip and this.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I'd go.
I would buy it for those reasons, the same way that, it's not the same because it's a different vibe with Queen, but the Queen and Adam Lambert is just amazing because he nails it. He's got the vibe. He's got the pomp and circumstance of Freddie, and those songs are too good just to disappear.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah, it's a giant legacy, right, that they left behind.
Well, let's wrap it up with a question. What is the Tragic the Hip's legacy in Canada? What is their stamp, and what do they mean to this country? I mean, it's pretty deep, but to me...
It's, yeah. But sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to say there'll never be another band like the Hip, as big as the Hip, because the whole landscape has changed.
Oh, yeah.
Even if there was a band that came out tomorrow from, you know, Victoria, BC, that was five guys with the same vibe, there's no... The radio game is different.
Yep.
The climate is different.
Yep.
Just like there'll never be another Rolling Stones. We've mentioned them quite a few times, or another Pearl Jam or whatever it may be. So it is Canada's biggest band, past, present, and future.
Yeah.
And those songs will be played probably one out of every 10 songs, like we said, forever.
Yeah.
Because what is the Canadian sound? The Tragically Hip.
100%.
And all of us that grow up here can feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was the blessing and the curse for them. But in this country, they're legendary, man, and they always will be.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, well said.
I think so.
I got it, yeah.
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 And once again, you guys are listening to this that don't know the Hip, just go to Spotify. Allison put up a great Tragically Hip playlist, and just give two or three songs a listen. I guarantee you'll want to hear more.
Yeah.
You know? Last question, what's your favorite Tragically Hip song?
Wow, my favorite one is probably Nautical Disaster. Not even on your top 25. I love that song. Yeah. It's just one of those first songs that I ever got a chance to play live and sing and watch a crowd and feel the energy.
Oh, you're a musician.
No, I've tried to sing.
No, you got to watch them do it.
Yeah, gotcha. But I've stood on stage and sang it, but I'm not a musician.
Okay.
That would be my favorite for sure.
How about you?
I gun to my head, it's probably Grace 2.
Yeah.
That song that was a big moment for me with listening to them, where they changed so much, and I was right there with it. I liked how dark and, you know, kind of trippy it was. It turns into sort of a Pink Floyd tech territory at the end. There's a huge solo.
I'll never
it catches everything that I love about them.
Every time I hear that song in a good way, I'll always think of Gord. Scream.
Oh yeah, I'll never hear the end the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I gotta go Grace 2.
Yeah.
I'm also a big 50 Mission Cap because of the lyric that we talked about and that riff. Bow, dunk, dunk,
oh, it's amazing.
Bow, dunk, dunk, dunk. And then one more for me was I was living in Calgary and working in WCW, and I was flying back and forth. And my flights were always so early that I would just basically stay up all night. And there's a guy out of Toronto, we're in Toronto, called Andy Frost. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
This is Andy Frost overnight. And it's when Ahead by a Century first came out. So whenever I hear that intro,
this is the
Tragically Hip on, you know, late night with Andy Frost.
Yeah.
And just listen to this. It's pretty cool. Packing my bag, getting ready to drive for a, you know, 5 a.m. flight to wherever the hell is going.
Yeah.
So that song too has a special.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dudes, it's great talking to you, man. And hopefully, like I said, we were able to open up the door a little bit for them. It'd be one of those ironic things where they become super huge.
Now
that
gets bigger. I can see it happen.
And I hope so, because they're too good to be confined to our great country. We want to share this with you, just like we shared SCTV and freaking Molson beer.
Exactly. You're welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much.
All right, thanks again to Greg LaGrosse and Jamie Dew, who host the Fully and Completely podcast, which is dedicated to exploring the music, career, legacy, and legend of the Tragically Hip. You can listen to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And check it out, and also give the Tragically Hip a chance. They're all over Spotify. Anywhere you go, Tragically Hip playlists, Tragically Hip compilation. Check out Ahead by a Century and Fully Completely and 50 Mission Cap and Vaccination Scar and Locked in the Trunk of a Car and Highway Girl and Boots and Hearts, Three Pistols, Little Bones, so a Grace 2, so many amazing tunes that are part of Canadian history, part of our Canadian DNA, and you give them a chance too on this Canada Day weekend, and give Fozzie a chance. Go to FozzieRock.com for all our upcoming gigs. Fozzie at Incarceration on July 12th in Mansfield, Ohio, opening two gigs with Nickelback August 27th in Uncasville, Connecticut, and August 24th in Atlantic City, and our Unleashed in the West tour starts this fall. We're opening for Iron Maiden in Los Angeles on September 14th at the Bank of California Stadium. So we decided to book a whole tour around it in the West. We're starting on September 5th in Denver, first time in Denver. September 6th, first time in Colorado Springs. September 7th, Grand Junction, Colorado. September 8th, Salt Lake City, Utah. 11th is in Crystal Bay, Nevada. The 12th in San Francisco at Slim's. September 13th, Sacramento at the Ace of Spades. September 14th, of course, in LA. 15th, Las Vegas at Counts Vamp. We sold that out last time. September 18th, San Diego at Brick by Brick. September 19th, Tempe at Club Red. Tucson, Arizona on the 20th. 21st in El Paso with Sons of Texas and at Speaking Rock Casino. We love that place there. Kevin Vargas, great guy. September 25th in Dallas at Canton Hall. 26th in Houston. 27th in Hattiesburg and 28th Atlanta, Georgia, and Masquerade for the Cage Cult. Jared James Nichols joins us on every show. FozzieRock.com for all gig and ticket information. You don't want to miss it. You can also buy tickets to our VIP meet and greet, one of the greatest in the world. We'll play a mini set for you. Get to hang out with us and ask questions and shoot the shit and just have a good old time with Fozzie. FozzieRock.com. Go check it out and come to the shows. And go check out ChrisJerichoCruise.com. We are 91% sold out. Less than 100 cabins left. We're getting so close. You guys don't want to miss this. Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea Part Deux. Ric Flair is going to be there. AEW, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac, Jake the Snake Roberts, Booker T, MVP, comedians, Bruce Jingles, Sarah Tiana, Brad Williams is going to be there. We got another Craig Gass we announced today. He's going to be there as well, returning again. Rubik's Cube is playing, Killer Queen, Fozzie, Dave Svek, Project, Jared James Nichols, Kick Axe. My goodness, so many bands coming. Farewell to Fear, Dark Sky Choir, and of course DDP, Beyond the Darkness, doing paranormal, crazy stuff. Lots of cool things happening. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Do not miss the vacation of a lifetime. We're going to sell it out probably in the next month or so. I don't want you to miss out. I want to see you there. All right. Coming up on Wednesday, it's more rock and roll. Belated birthday celebration for Sir Paul McCartney. The Fab Three, me, Mike Portnoy, and Charlie Benanti, are reuniting to put together the ultimate Beatles reunion set list. 40 songs total. It's a fantasy world where all the Beatles are still alive. They decide to reunite and they can play whatever they want to play. But it's a 40 song max. Any song from the Beatles universe, what do you think it's going to be? What closes the show? What opens the show? Our various scenarios for how the fantasy reunion comes together, no pun intended, in the first place. All four Beatles are alive and well in this fantasy world, and they're playing music together for the first time ever since they broke up in 1969. A reunion show to end all reunion shows. What is the set list? Start telling us what you want to hear. Hit me up at Talk is Jericho. At I Am Jericho, and tell us what you want to hear. And I'll tell you what, it's going to be a great, great show. We've already recorded it, so it's not like you can influence the set list. But what would you want to hear on the Ultimate Beatles set list? Sami Zayn, what do you want to hear? I'm calling you out. I'm asking you right now. Join the Fab 3 on Wednesday for the Beatles reunion set list. Have a great weekend. Until then, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. Go listen to the hip. My 50s mission cap. 'Cause I worked it in to look like that.